Welcome. You are listening to the Profiles in Leadership podcast with Steve Anderson, sponsored by VGM Advantage. This is Season 1, Episode 4. I'm your host, Steve Anderson, and today we will be speaking to Bill Pfister about private practice physical therapy and the future of our profession. Bill Pfister, Jr., physical therapist, is one of eight partners in RET Physical Therapy, a group of independent, 100% physical therapist-owned practices with 23 locations in Washington State. He also sits on the board of directors for RET, helping to provide strategic insight to guide the future of the practice. He manages a full clinical caseload and assists in operations management and business development for RET. He additionally devotes his time and talents outside of his business to the profession of physical therapy. He currently represents the private practice section of APTA, serving as the assistant managing editor of Impact Magazine for the last 3 years. He also serves on the Washington State Political Action Committee, helping fundraise so that in his state may successfully lobby for legislative issues that impact the physical therapy profession. He has been slated this year to run for a director position on the private practice section's board of directors for the second year in a row. Okay, well, welcome, Bill. Thanks for taking time out of your day to talk with us today. And why don't we just get started with give us a history of your journey, so to speak, from, let's say, college to where you are today.
Okay, sure, not a problem. My journey from college to physical therapy school took me to the University of Rutgers, UMDNJ in New Jersey. I graduated with a master's in physical therapy in 2003. At that time, the doctorate program was just in its infancy, and they were just developing the curriculum to be able to kind of bring that to the university I was going to the following year. So once I graduated from with my PT degree, I took the licensure exam, and I moved back to my home state at the time, which was California. And had an excellent, awesome opportunity to work with my mentor and start a physical therapy practice in the Bay Area.
And who is that mentor? And,
his name was Todd Walker.
Okay. And how did you find him?
Well, you know, I worked for him as a physical therapy aide for about 2 years prior to making the journey on to physical therapy school. And he provided me with just a great amount of knowledge and insight. And, you know, I really feel like he set me up for success as I got into PT school. So it was kind of a natural evolution to be able to go back home, and the timing was right. And then I found out what the real world was all about once you get out of school and you actually have to see patients for a living. And at the time, you know, California, you know, was kind of dominated by the HMOs. And
it's a tough market. You know, California's a tough market.
You find out really quick, you know, from my perspective at the time, I didn't know any better or any different. But, you know, we would have to make it all work. We were very busy, one. And, you know, there would be days where I'd see 30 patients in a day with the help of a tech. And that was before EMR. So imagine the cramping your hands get after working on patients and have to write
a pile of charts on your desk, right?
A pile of charts. So, you know, that went on for about a year and a half. And, you know, it just, for me, wasn't something that was sustainable. It was taking me out of, you know, doing other things I like to enjoy. And, you know, because we didn't want to sacrifice patient care. So, you know, you're there after hours for 3 or 4 hours doing all the notes you didn't have time to do during the day.
Yeah.
So it was time for a change, and that's what brought me up to Washington State, where I currently reside, in the Pacific Northwest, along with yourself. And had an opportunity to take over at the time a struggling clinic as a big challenge. At the time, I was probably a little naive because, you know, I thought, okay, I'll you know, take over this clinic. I think, you know, I didn't really fully understand what that was going to require. And then additionally, I was competing with two other clinics in the same company in the same city, which I didn't realize at the time. So, it was a huge, learning curve for me.
Now, was that RET at the time, or was this a different company? It was RET. Okay.
Yeah, that was RET, where I currently work now. And at the time I came on the scene, which was in 2005, towards the end of 2005, there was 11 clinics, in the company. And, this clinic was not going to make it, unless they got somebody in there to kind of, take it over and turn it around.
And now I've just, kind of heard, through an inside source that you actually met a personal goal that you and your staff have been working hard for quite a while. So you mind sharing that with us?
Yeah. So I guess kind of just to reflect a little bit, when I took over the clinic, the first week I was there, I think we saw 18 patients for the week. And I think for the month it was, you know, 70. And we've grown ever since, through a lot of trial and tribulations, but, you know, trying to learn from those experiences. And just this last month, we achieved, just a crazy goal that I set about 3 years ago to be able to see 2,000 patients, unique patients in a month, unique patient visits in a month.
That's amazing. Good for you. That's great. Yeah, how do you get there? You must have a stellar staff, and I would suspect that you built that over time.
You know, it was things have really changed over the years, right? When I first started in the clinic, it was me and a front office person.
right. I remember those days.
You know, it's easy to control what's going on when it's just you and somebody else you're relying on to make it all work. Now I have a staff of 20, and, you know, how you manage and how you handle situations completely has to evolve and change. So it becomes less about, you know, yourself and more about your team, your employees, and your patients. And, so you kind of have to shift gears from the mentality of, you know, I'm just a physical therapist responsible for these patients to, you know, I have this huge family of team members that, you know, have their own interests, passions, and needs that need to be met to make the culture that I'm trying to develop a successful one.
Yeah, so I think that's a great comment you said. It becomes less about yourself. All of a sudden, once you reach that pinnacle, there's a lot of other things to do and a lot of people to manage and a lot of leadership things need to come out to get everyone head in the right direction.
Yeah, it's, you know, some things that I've just tried to instill in the culture that we have in the way that I choose to lead my team is just through gratitude, humility, and hunger, and not being complacent, because I really believe that if you don't grow and if you're not in a state of growth, you're slowly dying. You know, in any aspect of your life, really. We really do a lot of training, and you know, our goal is, you know, I think, you know, it's really easy to get caught up on the visit goal, right? But really, what that truly means to me is that we're following through on what's most important, and that's getting people well. And we do that by trying to create, you know, a unique healthcare consumer experience. And we've really changed the line between patient experience and healthcare consumer experience, because within the last few years, you know, we now have patients wanting to you know, tour a facility and talk to the therapist they're going to be treating by before they even schedule an appointment. So they've really become in the, you know, center of the driver's seat as far as dictating where they go for care. It's not so much the doctors anymore, really. You know,
people
are getting educated and are making their own choices. You know, and I think a large part of that's just been through, you know, access of, you know, social media and the internet and, you know, having access to information that they haven't had before. So,
yeah, that's so true. Well, let's come back to that in a little bit, but I want to go back to the story of your journey. People that know you professionally may not know you've had a basketball career before you became a PT. So share with us a little bit about that. I'm interested to hear your story there.
Basketball has always been a passion, in my life from, you know, the time that I was, probably in second grade, and, you know, it just kind of, became a part of who I am. And, you know, as a result, I was never like, you know, the most athletic kid on the court or, the most skilled kid on the court. But, you know, I always kind of use the motto, always be the hardest worker in the room. You know, show up early, leave late, you know, do the little things that matter. And, you know, because of that, I believe work ethic, you know, it enabled me to be able to play collegiate basketball. And I had that opportunity. I played for a university in LA, a Division I university. It's an NAIA Division I university called Biola University. Mm-hmm. I played there for a couple years, and then I transferred to Cal State Hayward University, which was kind of closer to home, and they had a really good, robust kinesiology program. Because I quickly realized that, you know, I wasn't going to go to the NBA.
Yeah, but you did go to Europe, right? You did. You ended up and played some in Europe, right?
Yeah, I was able to go to Europe for about 8 months and play in the league over there for not a whole lot of money, but it was a great life lesson. You know, going to a different country and understanding kind of the business economics of trying to play a professional sport. And, you know, my experience over there was rather unique because I had some ambassadors helping me through it. And, you know, they would tell me, you know, make sure you negotiate a couple plane tickets home in the contract. So if things go bad, you can get your way home. And then they always used to tell me the phrase, no pay, no play. You know, my first week there, you know, we're practicing and we're getting ready for the game. And I kind of came on late, so there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, team bonding and that type of thing that took place. But, you know, our first game, I'll never forget it. You know, I'm showing up to the place where we're playing, and all my teammates have on, you know, Versace, Armani, Gucci suits. And, you know, I'm rolling this JCPenney thing, you know.
All right. Well, start low and go for high, right?
back to humility, right?
Yeah, that's interesting. And now you live in Gig Harbor, Washington, which for those who don't know is like one of the most beautiful places in the world. I will tell you a little side story that when I was in PT school way back when, what motivated me and what inspired me to work hard and get through school and become a physical therapist is I wanted to come back to the Pacific Northwest. My goal was after a few years of figuring some things out, I wanted to start my own practice in Gig Harbor, Washington, and own a wooden sailboat. And that was my dream. And when I came back to the Pacific Northwest and started treating patients that had wooden sailboats, I quickly learned that they spent about 80 to 90% of their time working on the boat at the dock, as opposed to sailing it to keep those things in order. So that changed it a little bit. And then when I finally had an opportunity to think about a practice of my own, Little Gig Harbor, which was much smaller back in the 1980s, had like five private practices in it. And so my goals definitely changed. But ever since then, Gig Harbor has been just that beautiful, pristine spot. And now you're living in paradise.
Yeah, it's been a good transition. We've been here for about a year now, and you know, we really enjoy it over here. For some reason, to me, you know, when I cross, everybody, you know, gives me heck about this bridge, the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. You got to cross every day because you got to pay a toll to get back across it. But for me, when I cross that bridge, it's like just a huge relief. You know, you feel like you're someplace different than you just were, and you can kind of put the day behind you, and yeah, it helps me recalibrate kind of what's important once I get home, which is my family. So
yeah, that's awesome. Good for you. Can you share with us kind of the structure of RET and how you formed this company and how it came together? You know, I think it's a lot of our listeners are interested in business structures because, you know, from a sole proprietor to partnerships to, you know, LLCs and all these other things. So can you share with us a little bit about how RET is put together?
Sure. So Bob Tutlin, he is the founder of the organization, and we've been in business for, I believe, 43 years now. And when he started the company back then, he really didn't have a vision to grow it. It was just, he was going to have his practice, just like most of the guys back then that started, you know, private practice, and that was going to be it. And, you know, along the way, he, you know, he came across creative people that wanted to do similar things, and he was able to kind of be in a position to help them do that. So kind of fast forward to where we are today, you know, the way the partnerships traditionally worked was, he would have, it was all about the director. So he would partner with a director, and they would go into a clinic, you know, whatever percentage on either side of the aisle. And that's kind of how it would work. So that clinic would have its own unique tax ID number. And that was that, you know. And then as we've grown to, you know, we have 23 clinics now, things have really changed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we were trying about 6 years ago, you know, we have all these, we had maybe 16 clinics, but they were all named after their neighborhoods and were unique in that way.
Yeah.
So there was really no effort to brand, you know, the company. So while we had these clinics, we didn't really have, you know, any brand recognition in the community or marketplace. So that's how RET came about, was more of kind of an umbrella company to kind of help us use some economies of scale to get the word out there that, you know, they're not just a clinic individually, but they're supported by this bigger umbrella group of common owners. So just 2 years ago now, we created, you know, an LLC under which all of those individual clinics kind of got rolled up into. Mm-hmm. When the purpose for that was to create more of a legacy company so that we can, you know, as people, you know, get seasoned and they want to sell some of their ownership, they can have a vehicle to do that. That would be much less complicated than it would have been 2 years ago.
Right.
Because we had all these different partners with different percentages of ownership, and it was very complicated. So we wanted to create a vehicle so that we could offer ownership to others as, via sweat equity, or if they wanted to buy into our company and we thought they would be a good partner. Or on the flip side, you know, if, you know, people want to take some chips off the table, we can do that in a more streamlined fashion where it's a whole lot less effort. And that was a huge undertaking.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the time we had, you know, we had six partners, collectively, and getting everybody to, take a smaller piece of the overall pie and diversify your portfolio, if you will, isn't an easy undertaking.
No,
you got to really
that's a huge challenge, and it's just a real tribute to those involved that could have the vision to, you know, maybe step back a little bit to open the door for others to come forward, and in the long run, you create something bigger and better. But you know, it's hard for people to do that sometimes. So good for you. So are you guys still are you under one tax ID number now, or do you still have the multiple?
So we have multiple LLCs that have their individual tax ID numbers.
Okay.
And so that's kind of the foundation. And then we have RET Holdings as kind of the parent company of those.
And what do you think, when you've gone into a bigger group, like you say, the umbrella company now, and you've got that above you, what advantages or why do you feel that that's a better way to go than say to just have your, you know, your own clinic going forward on its own?
Right. It was more the reason why we did that was more so to create that vehicle of, you know, exit entry into the company,
right,
versus having, you know, a clinic that's separate in its own LLC. You know, that director would have a percentage of ownership in that one clinic. And if they want, it was just really complicated. So we kind of rolled them all up into RET Holdings, but we had to keep them separate for the tax ID purpose of, you know, if we just go to one tax ID, you know, the financial consequences tax wise, and, you know, just from not being able to print paper for several months, probably, right, during that transition would be, we just thought that was a huge disadvantage. And also, you know, diversifying your risk, you know, because you have those, there's different sides of the argument, right?
Right, there are, yeah.
You know, we have a larger voice if we have that one tax ID number, if we're in front of payers, because they can really understand that easier. But you also have bigger risk if something bad does happen, you know, there's more on the table to be taken away, or so we ended up deciding that, you know, that was the best way for our company to move forward. And so far it's been great.
Yeah, I think that's what, you know, a lot of my experience has been that a lot of people say, oh my gosh, your company is so cool, and you know, how can we get to that type of structure? And it's always harder to do the structure once you're way into it, right? I mean, if we would have had the foresight to begin that way.
The bigger you get, the harder it is,
because
the more people are involved, and you know, the wheels of progress can slow down once you start getting attorneys involved. And, you know, you got to really just believe in a lot. The reason why this stuff works is if you have a team of people that really believe in growth, you know,
right?
Because typically everybody has to give up something that they were very comfortable with to manage types of things move forward.
Yeah. That's so true. And again, I want to make that point that's such a hard thing for so many to do. And sometimes I think PTs, you know, don't always see that, but a lot of times if you do surround yourself with the right people and then are willing to give up a little something or step back a little bit to benefit the whole, I think that's where you get to the point where you are now, where you're really reaping the rewards of that bigger group and that that camaraderie and the greater resources that you're able to use now.
Yeah, it just gives us a lot more ability to be nimble in the marketplace. You know, if you're trying to start a brand new clinic and you want to take a loan and you take that P&L from RET Holdings to them, that's going to be much different than if you try to take a P&L, 23 P&Ls to them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, your CEO, Ben Sharp, who I've gotten to know a little bit over the last few years, is not a PT. So what does his perspective bring to the table, and how does he put it, how does he put up with all you PTs?
You know, bringing Ben on board, I think, really has allowed our company to, become more innovative and advance and progress at a much more rapid rate than we were before. He brings some unique insights by not being a PT that a lot of our PT minds sometimes just don't capture, because we're very clinical and the way we approach things, and we can be very set in our ways, and
it's, little tunnel vision, little tunnel vision sometimes, right?
Yeah. So it's nice having, a devil's advocate that can, approach those things from a different angle that kind of brings some more clarity to the overall, situation. And it really gives us the ability to have the kind of the best of both worlds, if you will. So it's, him being in the CEO position has really helped our company. But I will say, he isn't sitting at the top of a throne kind of putting out, these agendas and orders and those types of things. It really is a collaborative approach with our board of directors and our partners as to kind of the directionality that we're driving our company. And Ben's been really insightful on kind of getting some systems in place that really kind of bring and shine through the efficiencies that we really need to have to begin to grow and in the direction that we're trying to go. So, it's been nice to have him in that position, having experienced, where we were at before. We had him in that, position to where we are now. Our company has, just about doubled in size since he came on.
Right. Well, the moves that you've made have certainly been good ones, because your organization has certainly grown, as you've just mentioned, but also does great work and is well-respected in the community. So congratulations to you and your team. That's amazing. Every organization that grows really needs to find that talent that, that people will buy into the mission and, as you said, have that growth kind of perspective. What is RET's differential advantage that attracts the right people to enable you to go for that vision?
That's a fantastic question. I think we're still thinking about the answer to that one, to be honest with you. I think any organization that is trying to capture opportunity in the marketplace is ultimately hamstrung by the fact that they need stronger bench strength, right? They need to have leaders growing up within those clinics and identify those people early on that have those types of attributes and passions, and then be able to put them in a position to where, they're going to have success in the future. So, I will tell you in the past, my experience personally, we've really lucked out, because, my personal experience was when I took on this clinic, many years ago, it was like we had literally a 30-minute interview, and he offered me the job and said, "Here's the keys and call me if you need help." And that was it. And that was it, right? Like, so I think Bob at the, he has an attribute for finding talent. But, as we've grown at a faster clip, we really need to develop that talent from within and hire with purpose, and identify those people early on. So, we're continuing to evolve in that way. And we're just this year launching, we're not to give out any specific plugs, but we're doing kind of some executive practice management training for, those leaders that we've identified in our company that have the potential to become partners and also direct clinics. So that's one way that we're starting to kind of get people kind of up to par with the baseline knowledge they're going to need to have success, rather than just kind of reinventing the wheel ourselves and maybe failing along the way.
Well, it's so smart to do, because, as you know, that's my passion, that leadership development. And I think the more that we can mentor people and coach people and get them ready for those positions, earlier in their career, the better, so that they can really move forward and lead an organization. And you just can't you know, some of us, like you just explained, some of us were kind of thrown in and we kind of figured it out on our own. But I think you can do a lot better in the long run if you have a structured program that you can really work on people internally throughout their careers. And then you always have those people ready to take the next step.
Yeah. So I would say that's kind of where we're at now is, you know, we're in a position to really look at those things thoughtfully and, you know, identify, you know, that type of curriculum and training and as far as leadership and, you know, private practice and business savvy and put those together for people so that we're enabling them to, you know, to pursue their dreams, you know, because it's always a question I ask when I'm interviewing someone, like, you know, what is your true passion and where do you ultimately want to end up on your physical therapy journey? And some people don't know, and it's up to us to provide them with experience to kind of find their path and others know right out of the gates. This is what I want to do. So it's about putting together a plan for those folks and then helping them execute it and not just putting a plan together and saying, go do it, but, you know, helping them along the way and making sure that, you know, their intentions actually arriving at the destination that everybody thought it would. So,
yeah, that's really smart that you're doing that. And I commend you for helping people through that path. I think that's really a good way to go. Switching gears a little bit here, you got an upcoming private practice section election that you're slated as a candidate, correct?
Yes, that is correct. So last year I was slated for the director position on the private practice board of directors and lost a close election to very qualified candidates who are doing an excellent job. And for some reason, they wanted me to run again. And
yeah,
I'm the
good,
type of guy that can't say no.
Yeah.
So, wow. You know, I'm really passionate about our profession and the future is really bright. And, you know, I've been a guy that, you know, in many ways when I was younger in my career that kind of took advantage of the mana that private practice section provides. And I was kind of the guy that sat in the back of the room and just took it all in and then took it away with me and really didn't collaborate or share. And, you know, along the way, I've learned that, you know, I can definitely, you know, just through relationships and networking and experience, you know, I think, you know, it's important to really be involved if you want to make a difference. And I'm in a position in life right now where, you know, I feel like I could take on that challenge and do it justice. So I'm excited about it. You know, I hope it works out.
Well, thank you for running. That's great. And I think you'd be great in the position. What do you see as the issues that you're going to be dealing with if you're elected to that position? What are the issues that the national section needs to pay attention to?
Well, you know, I think there's several issues currently. But when we think about, you know, the issues surrounding what our mission statement are, you know, which is, you know, to champion the success of the physical therapist in business, I think, you know, all of those things developed around that kind of help develop the vision, which is, you know, the society demands the access to physical therapist business, which is unique because, like I was sharing with you earlier, people are starting to find us. It's amazing that's starting to happen, but there's so much of the population out there that still doesn't know who we are. And, you know, we've been charged with the management of population health and being involved in that purpose. And I think that's a huge hurdle that we have yet to get over in our profession. And I think there's some things that, you know, we've done thus far that are helpful, but I do think that there's going to be more that needs to be done to get us, you know, to where we really need to be in the marketplace so that people are really choosing us first in many ways. Because we have a lot to offer. People just don't know it. And so we're working towards that initiative. But, you know, we're also dealing with, you know, these evaluation codes that just kind of are kind of bringing us up to par with, you know, other medical professionals. And we've got some work to do on that front because they haven't really assigned values to those codes yet. Right. And, you know, we really need our clinicians out there and in any industry, really, whether it's acute, private, wherever you work, to be thoughtful and how you're using those codes. And so that, you know, they don't just take them away and say, we're just going to pay you a flat rate, no matter whether it's complex or not. You know, that can definitely hurt us in the future if we don't manage that properly. But it can also really help us if we do. So that's something that's exciting that's happening.
Okay. Well, awesome. Well, we wish you the best of luck for the upcoming election, and we'll see you in Chicago in early November for the private practice section meeting and the elections. And as we wind down here, Bill, I really appreciate your time today. I've enjoyed talking to you. It's nice to hear about your journey and the great company that you're a part of. And I really appreciate your time, and look forward to seeing more what you can do in the future for this profession.
Well, thanks, Steve. It's been just a real pleasure to be invited to be on the podcast. Thank you so much for thinking of me. And, you know, this stuff just gets my innovative entrepreneurial juices flowing. And as you know, I'm never short to talk, you know, the physical therapy profession and business strategies and those types of things. It's just something I love to do. And if others out there want to reach out and discuss anything, I'm kind of an open book in that way. So, you know, I'll kind of share my cell phone number. If anybody wants to reach out to me, it's 253-303-1042. And, you know, let's get the conversation started.
Yeah, amen. And thanks for your willingness to do that. And I've experienced your generosity in that way as well. And we need more people like you. So congratulations on your success so far. And I'm sure you're going to do even better in the future. So thanks again, Bill.
Thank you so much, Steve. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to check out our entire library of podcasts and videos at vgmadvantage.com. This has been Profiles in Leadership Podcast, and this is your host, Steve Anderson. Thank you for listening.